For centuries, man has been on top of the food chain. Until now.
They're here! They're coming! God, no!
So he doesn't understand that we're dealing with a highly intelligent beast.
What is it about those little furry bodies that's so frightening?
Science has agreed that unless something is done and done quickly, man as the dominant species of life on Earth will be extinct within a year. Nature, mad, rampant.
Oh, no, not the beast! Not the beast! Ah! Oh, no, my eyes!
The next victim could be you.
Hello and welcome to another spine-chilling episode of The Food Chain, where nature runs amok, animals attack, and mankind is on the menu. Isn't that a weird phrase, on the menu? I mean, if you're at a restaurant, they give you plates and bowls. They don't actually put the food literally on the menu. We should be saying mankind is on a very nice piece of china, and here's some pretty silverware. Well, except that animals don't really use silverware. I guess they don't actually use plates either. Well, raccoons might, but I haven't seen any evil raccoon movies yet anyway. Oh, well, joining me, as always, is my lovely assistant, X.
Hey, everybody. You know, the food really is on the menu, right?
No, it's on a plate.
The food choices are on the menu.
Well, that's not the same, is it?
No.
Yeah. Well, let's find out what kind of animal is going to be chowing down on a cast of B-actors tonight. It's time to let the fates decide and employ the dartboard of decision. Now, I've written the names of some animals down on some 8x10 glossy headshots of Courtney Cox and stapled them to the side of a hissing propane tank. X is going to throw the dart, and wherever it lands, that's the animal we'll talk about on this episode.
I don't know why we can't use a real dartboard.
Well, technically anything you throw darts at is a dartboard.
No, technically anything you throw darts at is a target, but it's not an actual dartboard because, you know, those are soft. They're made of cork. They're not potentially explosive.
This is fine. You'll be fine.
I still don't.
Just throw the fucking dart, okay?
All right, what did I hit?
Let's see. Looks like this episode is going to be all about bears.
Grizzly bears can and will eat just about anything. A grizzly is on the prowl constantly, searching for any food. But a strong stomach is just part of what makes this bear an apex predator. Size is a factor. This grizzly is almost 1,000 pounds, and where fish is plentiful, its cousins grow even larger.
Now let's find out why our bear is so angry. Cootie, go ahead and give the Wheel of Mutation a spin.
And the thing causing the bear to go on a rampage is... a mystery.
What does that mean?
Well, it means the filmmakers never implicitly state why this animal has gone berserk.
Fascinating. Well, I think I know which movie we're covering now, and it's a good thing that we have our special guest, our animal expert for the episode, who can help us talk about this movie. Please welcome a novel and screenplay writer. He is the co-host of Duncan and Beau Come Correct, Duncan and Beau Go to Twin Peaks, Duncan and Beau Escape from Guantanamo Bay, The Shade Cast, and he's our fearless leader here at the Legion Podcast Network. Please welcome Beau Ransdell.
Hey, everybody. I am the perfect person for this because I know so much about bears. It's gross.
I'm sorry. Bears are nasty, aren't they?
Yeah. What I like about them is they seem maternal, and they'll lure you with their like ruddy coats. You know, they seem a little fuzzy. And Fozzie himself, almost a homonym of Fuzzy, that he as a bear is adorable. And you have teddy bears, like they seem cuddly until you see Grizzly Man. And then you realize, oh, these are giant flesh eaters. And no film better illustrates that warns the public of the potential dangers of bears, like the film Grizzly, in my opinion.
It's a terrible thing to say, but I think Grizzly Man, not Grizzly, not what we're covering tonight, but the documentary Grizzly Man, is one of the funniest fucking movies I've ever seen in my life.
It's the story of an idiot.
It just makes me, yes, it is. And I just shake my head and laugh every time I watch it. And it's terrible because, you know, it's kind of a tragedy, but it's kind of not because he was an idiot.
Yeah, The minute you decide that you're going to go live among the bears, what you are saying is, I want to die.
Yes, I quit. I have given up on life completely.
I'm gonna put it in the bears' hands. My bear gods, I will bow down to, and they will decide my fate. And in the case of this poor schmuck, the bears were like, you seem pretty non-threatening, so we're just going to let you chill for a while. But it's the, you know, the human in a glass for them of like, eventually we're gonna eat this guy. Like we all agree on that, right? Like we're totally eating him. We're just not doing it today.
It's like it's the Dread Bear Roberts.
Yeah. Not today, Wesley.
Right. Almost like we eat you in the morning.
Yeah.
And he was just at, like, the poor fool was too dumb not to realize, oh, these are giant carnivores, and the second that stream dries up with trout, I'm kind of the next best thing.
So we've established that grizzlies really are just horrible creatures that will eat any meat packet that they find, and that does come into play in this episode's film quite a bit.
Yeah, it definitely falls into the ecological horror films of this era. You know, like Prophecy is a great example of it. It's a little more on the nosy with the environmental message. But I mean, that's what, not to get ahead of ourselves, but that's what this movie opens with is, you know, good old boy Andrew Prine spinning some, like, you know, some down-home wisdom about taking care of the parks. And, you know, that's the heart of this movie is it's an environmental film, but fortunately, it's directed by William Girdler, who doesn't give a shit about the environment. He just wants to make a killer bear movie.
I love all of his work so much. Oh my God.
It is an impressively B-movie career. Like, it never goes below a B-movie, and it never goes above a B-movie.
No.
And you gotta hand it to the guy for that. So, I mean, good Lord. This, you know, looking at his filmography, the Manitou is it's definitely a B-movie, and it's terrible, but it's also amazing.
Yes.
The one thing I haven't seen on this list is Project Kill, which sounds incredible because Leslie Nielsen is in it pre him being a comedian.
Right.
And so it sounds like this like kind of assassin movie with Leslie Nielsen, which sounds like the greatest thing I never saw.
I haven't seen that either.
William Girdler also did Day of the Animals, which has Leslie Nielsen fighting a goddamn bear
with his shirt off,
with a shirtless. And that is one of the noblest, most beautiful things I've ever seen in cinema.
Oh, and he also kills Andrew Stevens, so...
Yeah, Day of the Animals is amazing, too.
That is amazing, and we will be covering that on a future episode of the show, for sure.
That ought to be, like, your episode 100 or something, because that's got all of the animals.
It does, and it has all of the cast. It's got everything you could possibly want in an animal film. But we are really going off at this point, because we have...
Sorry.
No, don't apologize. I'm right there with you. Yeah, when we do our special, like, spin-off Girdler cast, we'll talk about all of these things in greater depth and really get into the man's work. Yeah, sorry we went off, Cootie.
That's okay.
It's cool, baby. We're talking grizzly bears. It's going to be fine. Right. It's going to be smooth as silk.
Oh, my. All right, then. I'll saddle up.
Will you?
By the way, good safety tip, don't put a saddle on a bear. Just an FYI. They do not like it.
That seems wise.
Well, we will return with our discussion of the 1976 classic Grizzly back in a little minute.
Hello, this is the Doom Show. Keep on keeping on and keep on trucking, America. We don't listen to our feedback because we don't get any.
The truth hurts.
I just alienated the two people that give us constant feedback. Sorry, guys.
That's gotta go. That's gotta go in there.
So on the show, we talk about giallo movies and slasher movies and cult movies. Sometimes we even talk about Cameron Mitchell and his movies. I am Richard. Who are you?
I'm Brad, the guy that's not Richard, or Jeffrey, or Simon.
That's right. We have four people, and we always talk at once, except to each other.
Jeffrey lives up north. Simon lives across the world. Richard lives in Penis, Alabama.
Hello, This is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Check out the other shows on legionpodcast.com. You can check out more Hello, This is the Doom Show at hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or at doommoviethon.com.
Check for our Amazon exclusive Hello, This is the Doom Show cookbook.
Do you like hot dogs?
We got them.
Do you like mac and cheese?
We got it.
Do you like cheddar?
We have it.
Actually, we don't.
No cheddar.
Just Colby. Colby Jack.
Hello, this is the Doom Show. We never gave up on you because you never gave up on us.
Wow.
Welcome back. Let's jump right into this, shall we? I know that X has watched this movie more times than most people would feel comfortable with, but Bo, I hear you're really a bit of a fanboy of this movie, aren't you?
I am. I have Grizzly on Blu-ray, which is, like, that ought to get you into some secret meeting. I guess of Grizzly fans. I don't know. But you should get something for that. And, yeah, I love this movie. I saw it as a kid because I was into animal attack movies, like nature gone amok films. I've always appealed to me. And Grizzly, I didn't realize how much of a Jaws ripoff Grizzly was until much later. I just knew I really liked it, and I also liked Jaws. And then as I got older, I was like, holy shit, they just remade Jaws with a bear. This is the best thing I've ever seen.
it's literally the Land Shark movie.
It totally, like, there are shots with, like, the three main characters around the fire and stuff. We'll get to it later, but it is just the Jawsiest Jaws that ever Jawsed in the middle of a bear movie, and I love it. And but they don't do it right. Like, it's kind of shitty, and that's the beauty of Grizzly, is that it is a like a hot tub of awful.
A hot tub of awful. That is a great description.
But there are some sexy folks hanging out in that hot tub. And you're just like, you know what? I want to hang out in the shitty hot tub for a while because all these people are pretty. So, yeah, I love Grizzly. I think it's wonderful. And there's, I mean, it's the best thing that ever happened to a sleeping bag in a movie. So
there you go. And produced by Edward L. Montoro. And that name means quality.
You know, if, like, it's the 1-2, if Girdler doesn't do it, then you hit him with the right.
That's right.
It, yeah, no, this is a movie that was doomed to middle. I think it's better than that, though, like, surprisingly. But, I mean, like, you hear the name Richard Jekyll, your ears perk up and you're like, wasn't he in, you know, to a certain group of us? I think you guys are in this category.
Right.
You hear that name and you're like, oh, Grizzly, or like Day of the Animals or whatever. And other people are like, he was in The Great Escape. You know, it's like, yeah. I am. That's not how I'm built. I like Grizzly is my Jekyll reference. So that says terrible, terrible things about me as a person.
I don't think so. This is one of the manliest casts ever put together in the 70s. Christopher George, Andrew Prine, Richard Jekyll. My God, I just want to drink some Olympia and just rub flannel on my balls when I think about that.
I... I wish, there's part of me that wishes the Andrew Prime part had just been played by Jerry Reed.
Especially at the beginning when he's given that speech, because that would have been a great kind of weird Jerry Reed CB babble moment.
Or like the conversation he has about Vietnam later in the movie that is way too egregious. And oh my God, like Jerry Reed would have been America's most hated man had he been the one delivering that speech, I think.
Let me tell you about them gooks. 30 of them. 30 gooks. Call them gooks.
You know why we called them that? You know, and just like Jerry could not pull this off. You need Andrew Prime to at least bring a little bit of gravitas to the proceedings. Because Richard Jekyll ain't bringing the seriousness to the role. He's running around in deer skin most of the movie, and that does not gravitas make.
See, and I wasn't thinking Jerry Reed. I thought if you replace him with Vic Morrow, but later, that would have been horrible.
Yes, that would have been real bad.
Just awful.
Probably would have saved his life, though.
Probably would have.
Put his career on a different trajectory that kept him out of that Twilight Zone movie.
Seems to know what we're thinking.
A grizzly is an animal, Kelly. Don't give it human qualities.
See, he doesn't understand that we're dealing with a highly intelligent beast.
So here's the setup. We are in some national park. I think we're supposed to believe it's up in the Pacific Northwest somewhere, when really it's in Georgia. It's certainly piney enough to be Georgia. If you pay attention to the exteriors, you're like, yeah, that's Georgia. a lot of the woods are, I don't want to say uncharted, but they're much the same as they always have been. Nobody's really been trying to build things. I can't think of the word I'm trying to think of right now. Anyway, there are campgrounds, and there's a park supervisor, and there's the head park ranger, and of course that's Christopher George.
Who is never not smoking in this movie.
He's never not smoking in any movie. In fact, you can see where like he's smoking cigarettes in this movie, and then he like kind of graduated up towards cigars for Pieces and like Gates of Hell. So it's just like, these cigarettes aren't enough, damn it. Brr, give me a cigar, Albie. That'll be great.
What draws the eye in a scene?
Right. Was he really that method?
Yeah, I think that's it. Like, it was the old, like, have you ever heard the story about Steve McQueen and Yul Brynner during the filming of Magnificent Seven, where Yul Brynner was getting real pissed off because even in scenes where he had all the speaking parts, Steve McQueen in the performance behind him would constantly be fidgeting or fucking with a bucket or something, like drawing people's attention to him. And I think that's the Christopher George way of like, what can I do to make sure that no matter what else is going on in the scene, people are looking at the George. The man is a tall drink of water. No question about that. Steely blue eyes.
And nice teeth. Nice, just shiny, huge teeth. So, like, even when he smiles at his girlfriend, who just happens to be the daughter of the guy who owns the restaurant in the park, he looks like he's about to bite her face. And it's just the size of his teeth. He's not being threatening. He's just like, you look tasty.
He's just Amy from Fright Night.
Yeah.
Just mouthful of real daggers. Yeah, he is like, he is of that ilk, though. He is kind of that 70s Marlboro man kind of looking guys.
Yeah.
And I can't think of another good example. I know there are some of actors that were like that, that kind of filled out those B-level films starring roles.
Doug McClure.
Yeah, Doug McClure is a great example. I mean, even going back, Peter Graves, you know, yeah, doing all the Corman stuff and the Bird Eye Gordon stuff, of that kind of actor that can kind of deliver the straight lines like you need him to, and is kind of, you know, steel jawed and the leading man type. And that's kind of what Christopher George is. And like, we don't really have actors like that anymore, because there aren't movies like this anymore. I mean, you kind of have it, but they get filled by Lance Henriksen all the time.
Yeah,
that's true. He's got the market cornered on that. Like, I'm going to be the B movie guy. Like, if you need a name, I'll show up for 3 days.
Just pay me and make sure there's whiskey.
Right. God bless him. You know, I mean, do your thing. You know, like, hey, we made a movie and Robert Patrick showed up and it wasn't for the whole shoot. You know what I mean? so he wasn't giving the kids notes behind the camera or nothing. So there was that style of film that happened in the 70s that created a phenomenon like a Christopher George or a Doug McClure. But it's great to see, like, he carries the movie. He has to carry the movie on his back, and he kind of does, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think he does so quite well. It's important to note, to me anyway, that his girlfriend, her name is Allison, she is, as most girlfriends are in these type of films, she is spunky. And to quote the immortal Lou Grant, I hate spunk. So this woman irritated the living shit out of me.
She could not be more tacked on to this movie.
She's if there pointless.
Were a pushpin in her back in every scene to remind you, like, you don't have to worry about this. Like, nothing's ever going to come of this. It's fine. We're just waiting to get to the woods. I mean, the ocean, and then everything's going to be cool.
Right.
She is that, like, kind of 70s era, like, where Hollywood got women's lib wrong, you know, of they're just, right. Hey, I'm the Mary Tyler Moore type. I'm vivacious. And you're just like, you're not a real character. You are.
I'm here to help. I'm here to help. I want to go with you. I can help if I go with you. Well, it's like, are you my girlfriend or are you my pesky little brother? Because I can't decide.
And she looks like, look, I don't want to be sexist. Never do. But she looks almost age inappropriate for Christopher George.
She does.
I feel like she's a little old. Like, and the thing is, I know they're probably closer to the right age, but it's just so weird. I've been trained by Hollywood that my leading man should be with, like, a younger woman. But also, Christopher George is, like, doesn't look super old in this. So he looks like he could be late 30s, and I'm looking for a woman that's, like, mid to early 30s. And this woman looks like she's 42 and wants to, like, teach my kid second grade music.
Right. It's like she just walked out of Walnut Grove.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little too squeaky clean for a Killer Bear movie in a lot of ways.
Oh, for a Christopher George movie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at some point he going to make that move, and she's just the type of girl to, like, just slap him across the face and say, well, I never.
Yeah. And all right. So, because I feel like the two guys here are just being assholes, Cootie, am I wrong about this? Am I being offensive?
No, you're right on the money, actually. She totally looks like a third grade teacher who's, like, middle-aged and never been kissed, and you're just kind of like, yeah, it's incongruous. I agree. They don't have any chemistry either, which I look for more than just, like, age appropriateness. Just those two don't jive at all.
Yeah.
So right. It's almost like, will somebody please just pop the spinster and get over it, get it out of the way, and let's
so
go
she'll
on.
Settle down. So
hi, I'm Allison. I've tried a lot of jobs. You're the worst, Allison. I'll tell you right now. I ran a boutique for a little bit. Oh, Allison. Tell me it wasn't candles. It was candles.
I was the equipment manager for my high school softball team.
Right. I went to prom with my dad.
God.
Oh, Allison. Shut up.
Oh, just terrible. Allison, unfortunately, is not one of the two female hikers that we see at the beginning of this film, which I don't really understand what they're doing. I don't know how long they've been camping, because while they're at their tent, fucking Ranger Brad comes up out of the woods riding a horse, and you think it's the grizzly just for a minute because it's from the point of view of the horse, but no, we'll get to bear vision later. So this ranger's like, hey, how long are y'all going to be up here in the woods? And they're like, oh, we'll be down before dark. We're just going to finish lunch and pack up. And it's like, okay, well, it sounds like you were just there for the day, but, you know, they've got the tent, they've got, they brought toilet paper. I mean, it's like,
there's a fire. I mean, like, they were there.
Yeah.
But maybe they're just go-getters. Like, we're going to do all of the camping.
Just ultra camp.
Yeah, super, super camp in 8 hours.
It's like speed camping.
Yeah.
Right? Come like, in, set up. Couple hours.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a 30-minute nap around 2 o'clock, and then we'll start breaking shit down. I don't know. It's a great question. Like, the production design on this was all over the place.
Set up the tent, hike, cook, take it down.
Make me a pie.
We're done here. Make me a pie. These girls run into trouble. One of the girls goes off in the woods to heed the call of nature, leaving the other girl behind by herself at the tent. And this girl gets, she gets her arm ripped off. And it goes flying across the screen in slow motion and lands in this pile of pine needles. So there's lots of eating and bloodshed. And the other girl comes back from taking a whiz and finds, you know, her dead friend, maybe lover. I don't know. This, you know, this was the 70s. It's possible. Anyway, so she takes off with the bear chaser. She goes into this, shed and locks the door. And she's like, everything's cool now. I am fine.
I'm indoor. I'm safe. I'm in a shelter.
I am indoors. The outdoors is out there, but I am now inside. Bear does not care.
Grizzly don't care.
Nope. Rips off basically the entire roof of the cabin and then shoves his arm in through the door. And I think it's supposed to look like she's being decapitated, but instead it just looks like she's moving from left to right really slowly. Just like, just kind of tilting her head. So, I don't know, not really the best shot. But anyway, she's dead. But that's...
Well, let's take a second and talk about this bear paw.
Okay.
Because it's going to show up a lot.
It is.
And it's a half step away from just a gorilla arm, but it's still bear paw-ish enough, but it is clearly a dude's arm. And I mean, does it take me out of the movie? Of course not. I'm having a blast because there's a giant bear, you know, it's theater of the mind, right. You know, giant bear is busting into this place, but it's for the reasons you talk about. Like, I think that's why this movie works, is that there is this moment of like, oh, I'm inside, I'm safe. And again, grizzly don't care. Grizzly sees a shack and is like, well, that's my food is in there. So I'll just tear that down.
Right.
And I think it makes it kind of scary. Like I'm not in shacks in the woods a bunch. Let me say that. But when I am, I don't feel safe in them because I know a bear could just knock it over.
Yes, this is very true. And you're right. That arm looks like somebody just broke into Bob Burns' garage and stole just an appendage that he had made. I also think it's great that when the girl's head is quote unquote flying through the air, she's screaming. So that's medically impossible.
No, because I heard that you can think for a while, and it's cool. No, that's my bad movie watcher character that I'm debuting on your show. Sorry, it's a failure.
She saw her body, man, and that registered.
She was like, that's me, but I'm about to die.
Right. But I don't know how I'm screaming because I'm disconnected from my lungs.
Magnets. How do they work?
Oh, man. All right. So they find the dead campers. And this is pretty... We're coming up on one of my favorite shots in the whole film. But anyway, yes, at the hospital, they discover that the girls were indeed killed by a bear. So the park supervisor, who should just be named Not Mayor Larry Vaughn, blames Christopher George for the attacks.
Right. But in fairness, he's got a pretty compelling argument. Unlike, you know, the mayor from Jaws, like his point is, how do you know you got all the bears? Maybe you didn't get all the bears. How do we know we got all the bears up to the higher level or whatever? And his argument is, well, this crazy guy out in the woods knows all the bears pretty much by name. And he told me that we got all the bears. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you listening to that asshole? Like, get scientists.
Get professional bear movers.
Right. Why are you leaving it up to fucking Jeremiah Johnson? So I don't think the mayor is totally out of line here. I think he makes a good case. It goes overboard. Like once he's like, well, no, we should let them camp anywhere still. Then of course that's wrong. But the core of his argument about the ineptitude of this forest ranger cadre is accurate. These are nincompoops and incompetence, but wonderfully so.
And Richard Jekyll essentially is playing Grizzly Man in this film. He's the Grizzly Man prototype.
He is the Matt Hooper of this movie, because he's the specialist, you know?
Right.
But he also ridiculously runs around in deer hides and covers himself in urine and stuff. And it's like he's a half step. Like, if he were more muscular, he would be John Rambo.
Yeah. Anyway,
when you first meet him, he is like, you know, when Christopher George makes the call, like, hey, you need to get down here and explain this whole bear thing, because I told him, you said, you know, you got all the bears and he's not buying this shit. So you need to come down and talk to the mayor. And Richard Jekyll at that moment is like, you know, damn it, Christopher George, I was here with a group of deer. I was practically one of them.
And right.
And at that point, Christopher George should have gone to the mayor and said, you know what? You're right. I'm not sure we got all those bears off the mountain. This guy is a lunatic. What do you want me to do? How should I carry this out? You know, but I'm political like that. I know how to keep a job.
Right. It's even better when he starts explaining kind of where the bear came from later. That's fun. The scene I was talking about earlier, the shot that I love, is when they're actually, they've got the rescue party out looking for the two girls. And of course, Spunky Girlfriend wants to come along and help with the search. And they've already been warned, look, you're probably not going to find like an entire body. We're really just looking for shreds at this point. And she's like, I don't mind. You know, I just want to help. I don't mind. Turns around.
You guys, I'm thinking about selling some Tupperware. Would you guys be interested in some? Can I come with you? I'll just tell you what I've gotten in the catalog. You don't even have to look at the catalog. I'll tell you what's good.
Do you think anybody in the search party would like some chocolate? I'm selling these chocolate bars for the marching band. Everybody likes chocolate.
I don't have a child. I just love marching band.
And chocolate.
Oh, God. Christopher George, you're taking Allison.
Jesus, get her out. Anyway, she immediately falls down. And when she falls, her hand goes into, I guess it's about like a 6-inch deep puddle of blood. And grew. It's great because that takes the spunk right out of her.
It's the Red Room in Amityville, you know, like, yes. Her hand goes right into it, and yeah, it's wonderful.
Sploosh. Yeah, so she screams, and I think that's kind of awesome.
I'll tell you the other scene from this sequence, you know, where they're like, oh, we found bodies, is when they're in the morgue and you get that slightly out of focus shot where you see a hand and it's like, oh, I see what you're doing. That's a jaw shot. But I kind of love this movie for just wearing the influence on its sleeve. It's just like, it's fucking Jaws with the bear, folks. Everybody get used to it. Except the next scene, which is like when they're going out to look, like, aren't the rangers like on the hunt for this bear now?
Yes.
And then the sexy ranger, do I have this right? Was she a ranger?
She was a ranger.
Okay, because I keep trying to wrap my head around this.
Yeah.
They're on the hunt for a bear, a killer bear, a killer bar what ate two people already. And she's like, you know what I want to do? Cavort in the waterfall. And And so she does. But I'm Grizzly hot. Loves fucking waterfalls and was hanging out the whole time.
Okay. Now, hold on. Before we get to this, because I know we're going to get back to the bear arm. The bear is watching this ranger, and it's watching her from an angle where it's very far. He's very far away, and he's kind of watching through the trees. Okay, so she strips down to her, you know, skivvies, gets behind the waterfall, and suddenly the bear is right there next to her. And I think we've missed an important opportunity here of having a grizzly bear who can teleport. Because he is instantly right there next to her, and there's the arm, and she's, you know, she grabs it and wrestles with it like Bela Lugosi in Bride of the Monster wrestles with the octopus.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
It's incredible. Like, none of it makes sense. There is no reason for any of this to be happening in this order. She should not be cavorting semi-nude in a waterfall.
During a search for a killer bear.
Right. Because as soon as you take off your clothes, you're pretty much saying, I want to be eaten by a bear. You know, that, like, you are totally defenseless at that point.
Look at me. I'm vulnerable.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't help that she covered herself in deer urine. That was a poor decision. But yeah, the bear, it moves around like a slasher villain in this movie. But, you know, fine. It's a killer bear. I'll allow, like, I'm not going to Neil deGrasse Tyson this too much because.
No, ruins it.
Right. At a certain point, like, you gotta, okay, the bear was in the waterfall. He's sneaky. That is the sneakiest ass bear you're ever going to see. But, you know, that's why they made a movie about him. He's a special bear.
It's like he tiptoes and it plays those Scooby-Doo marimba notes.
Oh, God, would this movie be better or worse if they actually included a scene like that? I don't know that it would be worse. If you just saw him like beep 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 beep, like, you know, on the tips of his claws, sneaking behind the waterfall. If you could CGI that in, I think that might be all right. That's a special edition I can approve of.
Right. It's also worth mentioning, to me anyway, that the woman who plays that ranger, her name is Victoria Johnson, and back in the day, she was in Penthouse. And I mean back in the day, because this movie came out in 76. She was in Penthouse, like 77, 79, somewhere around there. And I remember this because I saw that at a time when I probably shouldn't, because I was maybe 10. But Life Changer, first fire crotch I ever saw. So, natural redhead.
Oh, all right.
I don't know why I feel compelled to bring that up, but I guess, you know.
Well, you know, it's good that you have that out there now, and right. And other people can hopefully share their fire crotch stories on social media.
There should be a support group, I think.
Right. I'm just like, when did you first see a natural redhead in the All Together?
Right. Well, I was 10.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean you. I meant, like, that's the question you're posing your audience.
Right, right.
To interact with you. Like, the social media hooks, that's what you got to have. You got to have brand, and yours is apparently fire crotch. So, let's run with it.
We'll put up a poll in the Facebook group.
It could be.
So now we got two dead girls. We've got, well, three dead girls. One of them is a dead ranger. A dead dumb ranger.
Yeah.
Suicidal. That was death by, like, suicide by grizzly is what we got on our hands.
She may as well have just tried to imitate bear noises and tried to say, I've unwrapped my meat packet here. Right.
Like,
indulge.
Her suicide note was just like, you know, I want to be the gutted elk that I've always felt I was.
Wow, so this became like a German cannibal film.
Oh, if only.
We're talking about the bear now. We're talking about the bear and Scotty, which is the Richard Jekyll Grizzly Man character, which I think it's funny. You've got our three main guys. There's Kelly, Scotty, and Don.
Yeah.
What? I don't know. Sounds like a bad Southern gospel trio to me. Anyway, Scotty...
Or they're the guys that give you your HR orientation.
Oh, God.
I can see that. Hi, I'm Scotty. This is Kelly. I'm Don.
I'm Don. And I'll be showing you 14 PowerPoint presentations today.
Oh, God. Have you been touched by a grizzly?
The grizzly, apparently, is a prehistoric grizzly bear. It's been there since the woods have been there, and it is 15 feet tall and weighs about a ton.
He's friends with Bigfoot.
To this movie's credit, at no point is there a Native American character spinning a yarn about the legend of this grizzly.
No, it's Richard Jekyll who spins the yarn about the legend of he is Dr. Exposition.
Yeah, well...
but you're right. You're right. I'm glad it's not a Native American character.
Right, like, you know, oh, he is Wendigo, you know? That would be... It would just, it would be too offensive to ever get over.
Right.
And there's already one of those moments in this movie, and I can't deal with two.
We call him Spirit of the Ranger. He comes on the North Wind.
We have legend that Chris George will come to us, rid us of the evil of the grizzly.
Yes.
The
prophecy fulfilled!
So the movie doesn't do that, which is good. But then we have to do this scene where Christopher George and Allison are having dinner together and just kind of jibber-jawing about, you know, life, kicking around the old peanut. And you're just like, I couldn't possibly care about this. there is a killer grizzly on the loose. And there is so, like Cootie said, there is so little chemistry here that all this scene is doing is reminding me that I would rather be watching other scenes.
It's like she's interviewing him for like the Shopper news.
Right. And, oh God. I mean, like, what are you doing here again? Like you're some kind of half-assed photographer. Like other than the fact that I have this weird thing about kindergarten teachers, there is legitimately no other reason for you, Allison, to be at this table. It's inexplicable. Like, I just, like, if her job inserted her more into this story, it would make so much more sense. But it doesn't. She's just kind of hanging out.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what do you guys have a grizzly? Is it, it's eating people?
There's one scene I love where they're having a conversation and nothing else is going on. Christopher George is sitting in his Jeep and she's yapping about something. I don't even know. Because all I can look at is the fact that Christopher George, as the head park ranger, is smoking in an area that's literally covered by dried pine needles.
You gotta have priorities.
Right? As soon as he flicks that butt, the only bear they have to be worried about is Smokey, because only you.
Yeah, like I said, this is not a good ranger outfit. None of these people are doing a good job.
No.
They just happen to be, like, you don't go to war with the army you want, you go to the war with the army you got. And this is the situation we're in with this grizzly. Like, we got to take this thing out. It's murdering people. We just don't have a crack team to deal with it. We have these guys.
Which is why the park supervisor calls in all of the rednecks from Romero's Dawn of the Dead to come in and try to kill the bear. They may as well be singing I'm a Man as they roll into the forest. And again, it's the same thing from Jaws. Yeah. They're never going to make it out of that harbor alive. Yeah. Same thing. Just a bunch of yahoos.
And it's, yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, Christopher George complaining, like, these guys are going to kill them. They're going to kill a bunch of animals, and we can't have that. Like, we want to kill one animal, not all of them. And it is, again, you know, totally a ripoff of Jaws. But also another situation of, what the fuck is Allison doing there? But, you know, right. What are you going to do?
So everybody knows about the bear attacks now. It's on the radio. There are all these news reports. And still, there are a bunch of schmucks out camping. And I mean, fucking kids singing Kumbaya around the campfire and dirty hippies drinking Schlitz and having tent sex. It's just this crazy mixture of flesh and plaid and... This woman goes into her tent to, I don't know, I guess freshen up as much as you can inside of a tent. You know, you reapply the lipstick over the lipstick that you've already got on. Bear shows up, rips her right out of the tent like he's pulling a Twinkie out of the cellophane. But this one's cool because when the bear grabs her, it kind of like points her stomach towards the ground and like bends her backwards. So it looks like she's like indoor skydiving.
Yeah, a little bit.
As it's flinging her around, or like she's just like a really bad cheerleader. And, you know, and then it just like, I don't know, tosses her into the middle of a group of Mormon children who run away screaming. So that's a lot of fun. I enjoy that scene. I just can't figure out the actual mechanics of the position of her body while the grizzly is attacking her. It's very strange.
It's almost like he has her in his mouth, but that doesn't make any sense because, yeah, it's a big grizzly, but it ain't person in a mouth big grizzly.
No.
And so otherwise he would have to be kind of holding her and swinging her like, you know, a professional wrestler.
That's how all the kills with this bear go in this movie, though. That's one of the things that was cracking me up, because they like zoom in on the bear's face, you know, and his head is pointed to the sky and he's howling, and then they zoom in on the person who's supposedly being mangled and chewed to death, and then they zoom back to the bear's face and there's no fucking blood on its mouth anywhere. You're like, what is it biting them with? I'm so confused. This is the bear with two mouths. There's one in its chest that you can't see.
Or a knife and fork that you just never see him holding, where he's like, arr! Cut, 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 you know? Like,
I have a steak knife. I'm not afraid to use it.
Right. The bear's name is Kuwato.
If he can hide in waterfalls, who's to say that this bear can't use cutlery?
There you go. He's the cleanest fucking grizzly I've ever known.
I've already said he can teleport. I believe that is an actual thing in this film.
Or he's just the Tony Randall of grizzly bears, where he's like, oh, blood. You're like, oh, heavens.
You almost went full-on Snaggletooth right there. That was great.
Yeah, it was close. You know, my Tony Randall is surprisingly close to Snagglepuss.
A camper! A female one, even!
Yeah. Oh, man. God, that movie so good. Why aren't every movie grizzly? Anyway. But, yeah, so, like, once the camp murder happens in the improbable murder that it is, and also her betooked husband and or boyfriend, whatever he was, just shouting at the bear, like, come on, man, you're not coming off well in this film. No,
stop, put down your fork.
This bear has come near a fire, as well as people singing, and been like, you know what, I got this. You shouting no at him is not going to be the, you know, the straw that broke the bear's back.
Right.
Where he's like, oh, fuck, this guy seems serious.
I guess I should put her down.
Right now. Sorry, pal. Here, me.
Relax.
Get a little leather pouch for the knife and fork. Tuck these away. Yeah, but at any rate, so, like, we have to have another scene with the mayor and Christopher George as well, where they're, again, just kind of bickering about, like, hey, this is your problem, Christopher George. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's just what you would say. It's like, yeah, he's your boss. Of course that's what you'd say.
I'm not going to close the campground. There are no bears on Hemlock Mountain.
Yeah.
No bears at all. Yeah, so anyway, that's more of the Jaws stuff. Just go kill the bear. We're going to keep the campgrounds open. You know, it's Labor Day. I don't know what the deal is. So these hunters who are out kind of semi-roaming the forest, there's this one guy who's by himself, which I don't know why that's a good idea.
Well, you're sneaky.
It's not. But he's dressed all in fluorescent orange, like you're supposed to, so that's fine. But he actually does run into the bear. And as soon as the bear makes a sound, this guy drops his rifle.
Do you know how scary bears are?
Are you a hunter or not?
Oh, clearly not. I should not be in the woods at all. Yeah, no, you're right. This guy, and also they do the, you know, the pan up, and it stops right above the bear's head.
Yes.
Or right below the bear's head. And it's like, what secret are you trying to keep there? That he's got a bear head? Like, unless it turns out he's a mutant bear, you don't have to cheat that shot. But I mean, what do I know, I guess?
I don't know. The bear is so tall, apparently, if you tried to look all the way up at it, it just dissolves into gradients, and you really can't actually see his head.
It's like the last monster in The Mist, where it's just like, we can only see the legs.
So there's this great kind of like pseudo chase where the bear chases the lone hunter, and basically it's just, you know, a camera hitting branches and a guy running and looking behind himself, just going wah wah wah, and he falls into a river, which is great because, you know, bears can't swim.
No. I love that he's the only one that survives simply because he's clumsy.
Yeah, because he's a dumbass and he runs off the side of a cliff. But no, he gets away. But I don't remember there being a scene of like them trying to get information from him, which would have been the smart thing to do.
He probably buggered off. He's like, fuck this shit, I'm going back to New York.
Right. Can we talk to him? But also, it would make perfect sense to me that this crack team of operators would never think to ask him, like, where did you see the bear? What area was he in? Like, that's where we start our search. Instead, it's just like, he's lucky to be alive. That bear's dangerous. And right. That's it. Like, that's the extent of their investigation into this incident. Was
obviously he's dealing lucky. with a highly intelligent beast. Okay. Awesome. Where is it?
Right. Where was he? How far down? How long were you in the water? Let's follow that. I mean, like Richard Jekyll is your expert here. And he's the one who's like chomping on a cigar, like, lucky hunter. And you're just like, oh, man, like, you guys are the worst at this. If one of you didn't have an illegal weapon, this movie would never have ended.
And the hunters are almost as bad as our main three guys. There's like two or three of them around the campfire. And again, we think the bear is going to come in and eat them. And there is a bear, but it's just a cub. And they're like petting it and scratching its throat like it's Gentle Ben. And then one of the guys is like, you know what? We should use this bear as bait.
It's the most disturbing character turn I've ever seen in a film.
Really?
Where like, they're just like, look at this cute little fella. And one of them's just like, let's kill it. I mean, it is so fucking dark.
And they do. They do. They set it up for live bait. And the bear comes. But see, they're laboring under the assumption that it's a female grizzly and that this is her cub. Because, you know, there, of course, no other bears in the woods would be having, you know, offspring at this point. But they're like, yeah, she'll come here and she'll try to get her cub, and then we can shoot her and everything will be fine. Well, the bear shows up, and the bear eats the cub. And that's how we figure out that it's male. Because according to Richard Jekyll...
Not Matt Hooper.
Yeah. Only the males are cannibalistic. They will eat their own.
Anytime someone tells you they will eat their own, you're in a bad spot.
You are, very much so. And then we get this great scene between Christopher George and one of the other Rangers, who apparently is a 5-year-old in a 30-year-old's body. Because he's like, I want to go and hunt for the bear. Christopher George is like, I need you to go up to the fire tower and just kind of keep a watch out for the bear. And if you see him, let us know. And this guy basically just stamps his feet. I want to go on the hunt. Why? And Christopher George just, you know, basically smokes a cigarette in his face and tells him to go up to the fire tower. So he does.
Yeah, he might as well have said, like, Daddy just told you to go to the fire tower.
That's right.
And if you don't get your ass there in the next, minute and a half, I'm going to kick that ass all over this mountain.
We're going out to the woodshed.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you listen to Scotty the Grizzly Man talk for an hour and a half.
You don't think I can spank you? I can spank you.
My God, boy.
Right, and Don is just back there cheering it on, like, that's right, he'll spank you.
He will, by God. Yeah, Don, by the way, is the helicopter pilot played by Andrew Prine, and he's just glorious in this film. You can tell he's just loving the fact that he has to do this shitty accent, and he likes the backstory. This is like, I think this is like one of his favorite roles, because he's, well, goddamn, everybody around here is just kind of stupid, but me.
And in fairness, he's the guy who kind of gets it done in a roundabout way, so.
Yeah.
Don's right. Everybody else in this movie is kind of dumb but him.
Yeah, I actually really like his character. So anyway, dude in the fire... No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I like That character of the kind of brash country pilot. I don't care if it's a helicopter or a biplane or whatever. That kind of down home, like, you ain't seen nothing until you've been out here with me, boy. You know, that kind of character. Right. And that's what Andrew Prine is doing in this movie. It's just that, like, you think you've seen some shit? I've seen some shit, son. And he's also about a half step away from the, what was the Woody Woodpecker cartoon company, like Frizz Freeling, something like that.
Walter Lantz,
the wolf from those. So like, break it up now, son. Like that wolf, he is right next door.
And he's essentially the Captain Quint of this film.
Yeah, strangely so, because there's nobody that like he does the Indianapolis speech or yes. this equivalent of it. But other than that, he doesn't have like a death wish, which Quint clearly does. Wait, anyway, so it's close. But again, like Grizzly is like, yeah, that's all fine. But killer grizzly bear. So
right. We'll give him an accent, but it's going to be easy to decipher.
Also, the his tragedy will be this nation's tragedy. So that'll be good. Right. Everyone will feel good about that in the movie.
It's just a different war.
Yeah.
We've gone from World War II to Vietnam. It's okay. People will get it. People will get it. That's really, I think that was probably the battle cry behind the scenes of this movie. People will get it. It's fine. Just gloss over it. Move on.
Either that or it was, where's the light at? Moving on.
It's magic hour, kids. We're losing daytime.
We got 45 minutes for 3 setups. Let's go. Insider Hollywood jokes.
That's right. Ooh. Anyway, well, the ranger's up in the fire tower, and he can see all the hunters running around, and everything is cool. And he's kind of bored because he's not there in the action. But apparently, with his high-powered binoculars, he doesn't know how to look down. Because right beneath him, at the base of the tower, is the grizzly bear.
It teleported there. That's why I didn't see it.
Yes! Teleportation bear is now a thing.
I love this scene. It cracks me up.
It knocks the water tower over.
It does. The grizzly bear just knocks the entire water tower over.
It's a fire tower. The complete opposite of a water tower.
The thing that the guy's in. The tall thing.
Right.
I do like the fact that he is on point with his watching out. I mean, other than immediately down. but, like, he is just walking the planks, binoculars always at his eyes. And I'm like, man, I would be the worst at that job. I would be inside. You know, like, unless the bear literally came knocking like it does in this scene, I would never see it.
No, I'd be inside with my cheating-ass bitch chess computer and a bottle of J&B.
Yeah. Go full Kurt Russell, yeah. Right. Where you're just like, you know, the less I see people out here, the better off I am.
I just want to go back to my shack and get drunk.
You telling me you're sending me the fire tower? That's the only place I want to be, Christopher George. Just away from you.
Oh my God! That's fantastic.
That's what that character should have been. Not, I want to go out hunting with you. Like, you kill that bear. It's probably you and deer skin fucked up in the first place. What about you, John? Where are you landing on this? I trust you.
I'll tell you what. As far as I'm concerned, is Director Barber.
That's why I like you, Don. Straight shooter.
Then we get another great scene between Christopher George and the park supervisor. And I actually wrote this line down because I thought it was great. Christopher George challenges the park supervisor to tell him why he doesn't like him. Why don't you like me?
You know, it's just not a question you should ever ask anyone. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's not. It's okay because the supervisor just goes, Kelly, you're a maverick. We don't have room for mavericks. Is that an insult? Or is that awesome?
And also, what has he done that's been so outside the lines? You know, I mean, other than being incompetent with the bear count.
But to, like, be fair, he was fed bad information on that.
Right, but you're wearing the fleece jacket. You're looking sharp. You're the guy, and you got to go to the right people. Again, you just don't go to a guy who's always in deer hides for your bear count information. So, true. But anyway, like, I'm again, the mayor goes a little off the rails, but I still think at heart he's got a lot of good points to make. But I do like the fact that he is so, like, Kelly, you're a maverick, is like, that is the quintessential 70s line right there. It's a guy named Kelly who's a maverick. That's it. That's everything you need to know about 1970 to 1979.
My God, that. All right, you just blew my mind with that, because that's exactly correct. Kelly, you're a maverick.
Right.
And now it's 1980, and you should change that jacket.
Right. We've all changed the music we listen to. It won't take you long.
Put on a bright sweater. Everything will be fine. Now we get to another great scene, which is the attack on the house. I don't even know where the hell these people are. I mean, do they actually, like, live inside the national park? Because that's kind of how they make it seem, except for the fence. There's a fence. So maybe they just have, like, a little square footage inside the national park. And it's this mother and her son. And the son's got, like, this big-ass pet rabbit. It's like, yeah, almost like Lipa-size pet rabbit. And apparently the bear wants to eat the rabbit.
Well, and the rabbit initially...
Okay, fair. He wants to eat the rabbit until the rabbit escapes and kind of runs outside the fence, and the kid follows it. And we immediately think, oh, God, this kid's dead. He's going to eat the kid. But the kid comes running back, and he's caught the rabbit, and everything's fine, and everything's safe, until, again, just the bear teleports, and he's there standing on his hind legs, just howling. So the bear attacks the mother, and it attacks the kid. And now that's when people start really getting pissed off. Because you know what? To hell with all those adults that got killed earlier in the film. This bear wounded a child.
Won't somebody think of the children?
Right? I mean, he's not even dead. He's just wounded. And everybody's like, oh, now we've got to kill it. God damn it. Not the child.
Yeah,
so that's when our three heroes go trekking off into the woods by themselves.
It's a pretty good attack. Like he fucks that kid up real good. It's not like for a second it looks like he's taking his leg off, which is real nice. And then it's like, oh, okay, not quite. But for a second it looks like that, and you're like, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen. This bear has just mauled a child in front of my eyes.
And you don't get that often.
Nearly enough.
Yeah, it's rare that you get that. We're just going to go ahead and kill a kid. We're going to cross that line, and you're going to take it. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, but the mother dying is fine, because she gets the good old-fashioned bear hug.
Yes.
And which, you know, foreshadowing. Well done, Grizzly.
A little bit of a motif, yeah. Well, what? Storytelling skills? I don't know.
That's not the William Girdler I know.
No, I'm confused by this.
That smacks of competence. but I do love the fact that, like, following this attack, we've got to have yet another confrontation with Christopher Georgian, the mayor. And it's God. You're going back to that well a little too often here. Like, Jaws had three moments, and it was plenty. And, you know, you're the shitty Jaws. I understand that. But let's keep the arguments with the mayor down to, I don't know, five scenes.
Right.
I think we're in good shape.
And one of the scenes in Jaws was like the mayor being repentant, you know? Just that whole, I did it for the good of the people and the businesses and all that. He's just kind of having his own little breakdown. We don't get that from the shitty mayor in this movie.
Oh, no. Like, again, no. William Girdler is like, you want to do what? You want to pay off this emotional theme? No. We're doing a movie about a killer bear. Everybody get the helicopter.
I was going to say, why would we go after that when I've only got this helicopter for 4 days?
Right.
That's all the helicopter budget we have.
We got to make it look like Andrew's flying it. We got to make, you know, we got to do the bear in front of the thing on the, you know, the cheap ass set we've got going on here. Like, do you know how much this is cost? Like, this conversation is costing me a fortune right now, and I need to get to the helicopter. Thank you.
Right. And they do. They get to the choppa, and this is where the third act begins. And this is the equivalent of going out on the orca to search for the shark, except that you've got one dude in deerskin on the back of a horse, and the other two dudes are, like, in a helicopter. But they still manage to kind of camp together every once in a while. And they chum the forest by hanging up a deer carcass. And I guess there's just fuck all nothing else to eat in these woods, because the bear comes right for it.
Well, you know, we got to move things along. So, yeah, the bear immediately is like, deer? And Richard Jekyll is, of course, hot on the heels of this bear. And is, you know, like, the fact that he's wearing his beanie is no accident. Because at a certain point, he just gets attacked by a bear.
Not just attacked by a bear. He gets buried by a bear.
It's pretty wonderful. Like, one of the reasons I love this movie is the Richard Jekyll attack. Yes. I think it's fantastic. I think it's kind of great that, like, you know, it's kind of the slashy face stuff, but it also looks a little gruesome, you know, like, because of the cheapness of, like, how ragged it all looks and how much, like, they're just throwing shit on him. Like, I throw some leaves and pine needles on him, he'll be fine. And it kind of is. Like, they got away with that. And it looks kind of gross and creepy. Mm-hmm.
But do you know what sells that, though, is the beginning of the attack where the bear swipes off his horse's head.
Yeah. Machete claw.
Yeah, just one clean swipe, and there goes the horse's head. And now, of course, Richard Jekyll has no way to get away, and that makes the attack even worse. It's just like, damn, killed the horse, didn't even eat it. Now he's going to attack Richard Jekyll and bury him and save him for later, which he says earlier in the film that that's something that bears do. Now, I've never heard of that. Is that an actual thing?
I heard that from Richard Jekyll as well, so I can only assume.
Well, it must be true.
That's, as far as I'm concerned, that's corroborating evidence.
That's gospel truth right there.
All right. But I'll tell you what, I'll get to the bottom of this real quick, so.
Sweet.
Hell the mic, so Google.
Indeed. So after the bear buries Richard Jekyll, and he's out, I mean, he's not in good shape at all, but he manages to wake up, and he comes to, and he kind of digs himself up out of this bear pit, and it's like a really slow, almost like a Fulci zombie rising from the grave scene. Mm-hmm. It's like you can't even tell where his head is to begin with, but it's like, here comes an arm, here comes a leg, here's a kneecap maybe, and he's very slowly just getting up and brushing himself off, and, you know, and of course the intent here is that he's going to survive this and get away. Nah.
Psych.
Yeah, it is pretty wonderful that they just dangle a little hope for this character who, let's not forget, has just been mauled by a bear. Mm-hmm. And buried, so not having the best day to begin with. And
at least he's at least got sepsis at this point.
he's in rough shape, but he can make it. Like, you know, Don and you know, Christopher George Kelly are, you know, they'll know he's missing and come looking for him. So he's got some things going for him here. What he doesn't have going for him is that he was buried by a bear that wants to eat him. And of course comes back just in time to finish the job. And I can confirm, according to livescience.com, grizzly bears do bury their prey. Like, they don't keep them alive, obviously. They kill it and then bury it. Yeah.
I never want to go hiking again.
We don't do that a whole lot anyway.
Well, no, but I mean, this is not going to encourage me to do it, to realize that I could be stepping not only on some random dead dude, but that it would also be bear food, and I'm, you know, fouling up that sacred spot. Yeah, so yeah, never going in the woods again.
Nor should you. It's
right.
Yeah, it's dangerous, it turns out. What,
outside?
With all the bears.
Yeah. All the bears, that's right. And what's funny is, you know what, he may have had a better chance of surviving if he had just played dead.
Just a little bit longer, dude.
Nobody in this movie plays dead.
Nope.
They're,
well,
all
too busy running. You know, like, every time somebody is hunting for the bear in this movie, as soon as they are confronted by the bear, they run.
Yes.
You know, again, competence not high on the list of achievements for this group.
we kind of get to the end here where the bear attacks the helicopter while Kelly and Don are watching. And it's really not so much an attack. I mean, he does knock a door off, but really he just makes it spin around in a circle.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a ride at Chuck E. Cheese.
He's just kind of moving around like, you know, understanding bear physics maybe for the first time or something, but does not seem to be going for the cockpit, which is exactly what a giant killer bear ought to do.
Yes. But Don's got the rifle, so Don shoots at the bear twice, and then decides it's probably a better idea to try to use the rifle as a baseball bat. So he flips it around, grabs it by the barrel, and starts swinging. And the bear, of course, picks him up and does the bear hug. And it's pretty intense. I mean, that's an intense bear hug. Blood's flying out of Don's mouth, and he just, it's horrible. And the bear just throws him like a rag doll. And then we get, again, the Jaws ending, because there's a grenade launcher in the copter.
Supplied by Don earlier yep. in the film.
So, Christopher George, in the most Christopher Georgie way possible.
So smile, blows... you son of a bitch.
Blows that bear up real good. I get
that explosion's all right.
It
dude,
is all right.
I laughed so hard. That fucking bear exploded, and I just lost it.
It's the best.
It was great.
It's just missing a Praxis ring.
Yeah, right.
Oh my god! I'm all for the ideas we've had tonight being digitally inserted into this film. I think it could be a better movie. Either Sneaky Bear, Praxis Bear, whatever, get it in there. But yeah, it's an incredible explosion. And the first time I saw it as a kid, it left an indelible mark on me. You know, catch on like, you know, the cable channels and stuff here locally. And seeing that goddamn bear blow up, It fired my imagination in a really wonderful way, where I was like, I love that we live in a world where this is the end of a movie, where somebody just fires a grenade launcher at a bear.
And it explodes.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Naturally, it's a goddamn grenade.
Well, yeah, but the bear literally turns into a pillar of flame.
Well, it looked over his shoulder. And
I was going to say it may as well have been leading the Israelites out of the desert.
Yeah. Yeah, so the end of the movie, after you blow up this bear, which is the greatest thing that ever happened, Christopher George is just like, so just walk away? All right. And does. And the end yep. of the movie, like, he checks Don out for a second, and it's just like, all right, let's keep it moving.
I think I got some smokes over here in this pocket.
Don, you were you carrying any cigarettes when you? Oh, sorry, these are crushed.
Yes, these are smushed. Yeah. I can't smoke these.
Don, you son of a bitch! Even in death, you cheat me. I don't know why he's angry at Don, but yeah. It is, yeah, no, this movie, like, yeah, it's kind of stupid Jaws, but man, it's got a better, I would argue the explosion death in this movie is better than the explosion death in Jaws. Yes, that is classier, but you asked me which one I just want to watch a video of, and it's shooting that grizzly bar with a grenade launcher.
Just on a loop.
Yeah, it's
just like 10 hours of the bear exploding.
It's so perfect. I mean, like, it's the way to end your movie. Like, the villain of your movie just got blown up, and the movie does not fuck around. Like, credits are rolling, what, 18 seconds later? It's just like, that. We know why you were here.
It's like, nothing's even hit the ground. You know, there were no bear parts raining around in the forest. Just like, nope, we're done.
Yep.
Get these cars out of the drive-in.
Yeah. We got another showing in 25 minutes. Let's keep it moving. Yeah. Oh, man. But it's totally a drive-in movie. And that's the beauty of it is that it still hangs together as a movie.
It does.
And I really adore it. Like I said earlier, I just think it is, you know, it's incredibly campy. And I think you have to be a particular kind of person, maybe, to really love Grizzly the way that people ought to love Grizzly. But that said, I'm one of those people. I think it's a movie I can watch almost any time. Like, it doesn't fall down. It's not dull ever.
All right, let's kill this for just a moment. We gotta take our last break, and then we'll be back with our final thoughts.
In a world gone mad.
As you know, the Doomsday Clock is a symbolic clock face analogizing humankind's proximity to extinction.
One man must fight to survive on the global junkie of the future.
You maniacs! You blew it up! Damn you! God damn you all to hell!
Which versus the Doomsday Clock is that man's story? His search for entertainment is transmitted across time and space for your listening pleasure on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and your Android device.
This podcast is not fit for human consumption. Side effects include laughter, concern, nausea, vomiting, and blame for moral artifices. The producers accept no responsibility for any side effects, illness, or attempt to prank mind cause. My event guarantee is worth nothing. Zero. Zilch. Zilch. Overall, no sausage. In short, you get nothing. Nothing. Good day, sir.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Bo Ransel, and we're winding down our incredibly complex discussion of Grizzly. does anybody have any final thoughts?
I think that Grizzly, after he got blowed up, was reincarnated a few years later as Jason Voorhees.
Oh, yeah. He probably released the Jason slug inside the Grizzly.
Something like that. Yeah.
Maybe the downflow of the mountain was into Camp Crystal Lake.
I think we could, right.
I think we can tie this directly into Friday the 13th with no problems.
I think you're right.
Yeah, you know, he teleports. He's always there when you don't want him to be. Some fucking brutal kills, dude. He's like chopping people's heads off and shit with one fell stroke.
Horses! He kills horses!
And a horse. Yeah.
Jason okay, horse. Horse. He kills horse.
He kills horse.
I can't and believe you just referenced the Jason slug. My God.
And it's so sad because those crimes seldom get reported when a horse is killed.
That's true.
Sorry to bring the room down. That's real.
I think Allison should make some PSAs for that.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God, you guys.
Did you hear about the horse? All these horses.
They are beat up by their pimps, and their Johns will hurt them, and sometimes they will kill them.
They are sold to professional poker players in Thailand.
And you know what? The police don't even care. Them up and you say, a horse just got kidnapped. And they're like, we don't do horse crimes. That is a whole different department.
Is that horse a person? Because if that horse is not a person, we cannot help you.
And they will not listen to reason. They are the worst.
Sorry. My wife is currently just shaking her head in disbelief.
I'm so, so sorry.
I want to do something special here because every once in a while here on the Food Chain, we will award a certain actor what we call the Christopher George Award. Mm. And this is the first time that we've done it on this show. I'm sure that we'll do it, you know, a few more times. Not every time, because that's a special, special thing. But I'd like to award this episode's Christopher George Award to Christopher George. And there's a specific reason for that. Because in the scene where they find Richard Jekyll's body after he's attempted to rise up out of the grave and the bear is standing right there over him and immediately eats him, they find his body. And at the end of this scene, clearly you can see Christopher George yawn.
Oh, that's beautiful.
This man does not give a shit. Where's my check?
I've never noticed that. Oh, my God. He yawns.
He yawns.
Oh.
Wow.
And I laughed really, really hard. And that's like the most Christopher George thing you could possibly do. Is find your friend's body and then, like, stifle a yawn. So, our first Food Chain Christopher George Award goes to Christopher George.
Yay!
Well done, Christopher George.
You right?
Know, if you ever have the opportunity, you should absolutely give the Christopher George Award to Melissa George.
That would make sense.
I don't know if there is an applicable film yet, but give Melissa George time.
That's true.
Oh, she was in Triangle. That was awfully good.
I still haven't seen that. Everybody tells me it's great.
Yeah, it's quite good.
Okay.
But final thoughts on Grizzly? I don't think, I've yammered all through this episode about how much I love this movie, and I genuinely do. I think in my pantheon of animal attack movies, which, again, you have to be the right kind of person to have one of those, but I do. And Grizzly is in my list of the greats. I think it.
Yes.
I think it's wonderful. I think the acting is casual at best, and I sort of love Andrew Prine in this movie. And it also has a grizzly bear being blown up at the end. And
what more can you ask for?
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me what things we should shoot into space so that we may be remembered by future civilizations, that shot is on my list of those things. It's like, you know, Sergeant Pepper's and the bear being blown up at the end of Grizzly are the two greatest things that Western civilization has done.
Beating out the polio vaccine by so many points.
Leaps and bounds. It's no contest.
All right. Well, what about you, X? Do you have any final thoughts you want to share with us?
Well, I gave the Christopher George Award to Christopher George. I mean, yeah, watch this movie. You'll get your dollar and a half worth of entertainment for sure. So, yeah, I can't recommend it highly enough. I mean, even with everything that I can make fun of about this movie, I still say unreservedly, watch it. So much fun.
I gotta agree. All right. Well, guys, that's going to do it for us. We want to thank our special animal expert, Bo Ransdell, for coming on the show. Bo, do us a favor and talk about all your projects real quick and where they can be found.
Pretty much everything you can find on legionpodcasts.com. That is where all the shows are hosted, and that's kind of my gig these days, has been kind of building that out. Like, we've got, I don't know, 800 shows. It feels like it.
I think so. Yeah.
It's in the ballpark, and coming very soon, we're going to have t-shirts. So
nice.
Yay. Actually, it's baseball shirts is what we're doing, which everyone seemed to like. So we're doing that style. But anyway, yeah, all that stuff and, you know, continuing to do my own writing and whatnot. Nothing really to speak of at the moment on that front. Other than I keep doing rewrites of the same movie. So like producers are weird, y'all. I have a different idea for the ending now. You realize that changes everything, right? Ugh. We actually have to build to an ending. So anyway, it turns out you don't have to do that. I just saw Grizzly. You just blow something up. It's been a revelation. But no, so everything over on legionpodcasts.com and also sdfgaming.com, if you're into the video game stuff, that's where we do the video game podcast. And then that's it for now.
Cool.
Thanks, guys. I again apologize for my effusive love of the movie Grizzly. But it was a tremendous amount of fun. Thank you for putting up with me.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a blast having you.
Yeah, there's nothing to apologize for. yeah, you're in good company here. As always, you can find Cootie, our co-host Chef Al, and me on this podcast, sister show Kiss the Goat, also on Legion Podcast. Imagine that. And that's where we discuss devil movies from the last 50 years. You can also hear me on the Theme Warriors podcast, the Cinema Beef podcast, and you know what? I'll show up to pretty much any podcast you invite me to. You can learn more about me and my horror fiction at elderskeep.com. And of course, we have kissthegoat.com. You can learn more about us at legionpodcast.com. A lot of .coms, but you know, the more you know, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, just bookmark it. It's all easy that way.
Yeah, just do that.
Excuse me. Sorry. Yeah, exactly. But guys, if you like what you're hearing so far, do us a solid and leave the Food Chain a nice review on iTunes. It draws in more people, and the more the merrier, especially where animal attacks are involved.
And we are done for this episode. So on behalf of Cootie and Bo, I bid you farewell.
We'll see you next time at the bottom of the food chain.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Hope you find your dad.
I kind of love Allison, but I would hate to be around Allison.
You know, I like paintings where the people in the paintings have really big eyes.
Do you like big dogs or small dogs? I don't like... Big dogs are scary a little.
I don't like small dogs either because they jump up on my lap. I like fish.
But not salt water because it's a stink.
I made a rag doll and I used my own hair. I named it Allison.
Oh my god.
I made Tinker Toys fish. I call them Tanker Toys. I made a suction dildo out of a plumber's helper and a baseball glove.
You know what I've always wanted to do? Woodworking. I saw someone draw their name with one of those hot pins. I've always wanted to do that.
My uncle was a mechanic. You know what he did? He built a tank. He built a tank garage. He did, and I have pictures.
I travel with photo albums because I think the best way to get to know someone is to see them with their friends.
Can I sketch you?
Just on the cocktail napkin. I don't keep a pad.
No, just something I can refer to later when I'm cross-stitching.
Right. I'm going to make you a sweater. You just bought yourself a sweater for Christmas, young man. So, are you guys, like, going out into the woods all together? All three of you? That's weird. Do you want me to come along? No, Allison, we certainly do not.
I could bring the beans.
I have a camera.
I have some. I have some beans right here in my purse.
I have a camera, and my instructor Jerry says I have an eye.
I did a series of manhole covers.
I called it Under Our Feet. There were seven of them, and people liked them.